You're listening to IsraelScene.com.
And you're listening to IsraelScene.com.
Listening to IsraelScene.com.
Seen through the eyes of Steve, that's myself.
And you're on.
Two characters passionate about everything that happens in Israel.
IsraelScene.com.
IsraelScene.com.
You're listening to Israel Scene, and I'm Steve.
And this is Yoram, and I thought, Steve, maybe we do a little talking about an upcoming election. We've just gone through the American election, which was easy because there were two candidates. You preferred one. I preferred the other. It made for a simple engagement between us. But here in Israel, we have many, and we don't have candidates. We have parties that we vote for, and the party chooses the candidate, which is one of the problems we have here. So to begin with, we have the Likud, and I would like to share party names with people just for a reference, in the order in which people think that this next election will express their size. First will be the Likud, which is a right-wing party, a secular right-wing party. Then there'll be Kadima, which is a centrist right-wing party. And then there'll be Labor, which is a to-the-left secularist party. There'll be Meretz, which is a left-wing party. And there's the religious parties. There's usually three of them. One is called Shas, which is the religious party of the Jews from the Arab world. The other is called United Torah Judaism, which is the Orthodox Jews of the European world. And another party of the Orthodox Jews of the European world, whose name escapes me at the time. The one is the more mystical and spiritual, and the other is the more rationalist. Then there's going to be a Green Party, which is an interesting story. A number of former Americans running in that party, with a traditional green platform that we know of from Europe, ecology and social concerns.
Then you have Chadash, which is the Communist Party, which is Jews and Arabs, mostly Arabs, but some Jews, and they're trying now to be more inclusive by taking more less extreme positions in terms of its relationship with the State of Israel. And you have a couple of other Arab parties, and there is also talk of a new Arab party that will be more non-Zionist rather than anti-Zionist, and a variety of other interesting small parties. I think it's going to be very interesting to see what the possibility is of the secular parties and their ability to make a coalition without any of the religious parties, which could be, it's not a first, I think, but certainly could mean that the extortion or bribery for the religious parties to support the coalition, they get X amount of money for their schools in order to vote with the coalition. But the polls are correct, between Likud, Kadima, and Labor, they have an opportunity to make a majority, then we could have a different and interesting new Knesset. And I don't know what that means for the process with us and the Palestinians. I almost think it really is irrelevant because I don't quite think they're ready to compromise with us with what some of the issues that we have in terms of making a possibility for a peace settlement or a two-state solution or a Palestinian state, whatever you want to call it. I don't think we're there right now, and I think Abbas is going to be out real soon anyway.
Well, that's basically my feeling, Steve. The Palestinian business just has to wait. I mean, there's no way that Likud, Kadima, and Labor could agree on what to do or what not to do. Each of those three parties are almost at three opposite ends of the triangle of possibilities. Yes.
What I do find interesting is that Abbas made public the last offer that Olmert had made of about 6%+ of the West Bank being retained by Israel, mainly the Gush settlements and the outer Jerusalem settlements, which is now fully part of Jerusalem, and the return symbolically of 5,000 Palestinians for 5 years, which was totally rejected as unacceptable by the Palestinians. There's no room there. I mean, I would say, you know, maybe they can drop another point off of some land in the West Bank, but all of the Jerusalem communities, which are fully part of integrated Jerusalem, and the Gush settlements, which most probably are as much part of Israel as they have always been. I mean, where do you go from there? There's no more room. I mean, to move that I know of.
Actually, Steve, I don't think an agreement is at issue. I mean, we've been hearing for a long time. I was just remembering an event that I attended in a hotel in East Jerusalem with Saeb Arikat, who was the negotiator on the part of the Palestinian Authority and has been from the beginning, their official negotiator with Israel. And sitting in the panel was also Meir Shitrit, who at that point was Minister of the Interior in this current Kadima government. And they basically agreed that we were 6 months away from, there's no problem, you know, nothing, everybody knows what's going to happen. We're basically 6 months away from an agreement. I don't think an agreement is the issue. I think the issue is fulfilling the agreement. Any agreement we make, the problem is the fulfillment, and that we have ourselves a history, not only in terms of the Arabs, but in terms of ourselves, in terms of what goes on in our country, in terms of what goes on in our families. A pathology of non-compliance. You know, we make statements about what we want with our children or what they can have and what they can't have. And as an objective observer, I mean observing from outside the family, then 10 minutes later you see the child has whatever it was that the parent absolutely refused to give them. We have all kinds of laws concerning foreign workers, which I happen to know a lot about, and there too, there's basically no enforcement. So that's a problem that we have, we ourselves. And in the relationship with the Palestinians, that's a problem that's catastrophic. Because once they learn that we're not going to insist, and we just have it now with Gaza, that we make statements and that one rocket and, you know, we're going to hit them back. And we made that statement in regard to Lebanon, and yet we don't do anything. So that's a learning experience for them, which is that they don't have to pay any attention to the agreement and to our threats in terms of if they don't follow through on the agreement, because we're not going to do anything.
Once the rockets come and land in Israel, there's more pressure from the EU to open up Gaza because of all the poor folks there who are suffering, you know, like they have no connection to Hamas to begin with. So we not only do we open up and allow the flow of goods and services into Gaza, but we give them 100-some-odd million shekels or dollars, and we release 200-some-odd prisoners. I mean, if I was Hamas, hey, man, keep the rockets flowing because the money keeps coming. And the goods keep coming from the tunnels and from Israel, the more pressure we put on them, because the EU then puts pressure on Israel to open it up. And Israel doesn't have the backbone, the strength, the determination, and the vision and understanding of what the goal is, the culture of what the goal is and what we want to accomplish here. It's everything is kind of helter-skelter, and there's no real serious policy or commitment.
All of those reasons, Steve, speak to my feeling that the issue of Israel and the Palestinians, the issue of Israel and the Arab world, critical as it is, and even though the you know we really should be involved and doing things, it's not going to really happen now. But there are two other, I believe, totally critical issues. One is the economic issue. What's going to happen here economically? Not just here, of course, in relation and in harmony or disharmony with what's happening in the world, and the problem of our ability to function politically in a way, governmentally, in a way that's functional, and that we can get things done and we can move forward on a number of very, very critical issues, the water issue, the educational issue, and so on and so forth. So my feeling is that the ideal would be a government of national unity made up of only those three large parties that would enact very quickly, wouldn't even discuss, wouldn't get bogged down in the issue with the Palestinians and all sorts of other things, but would have the power to enact economic policies and would have the money to engage in these economic policies by not giving in to the religious parties and sending hundreds of millions of shekels into the world of the yeshivot. This, by the way, was the reason that Tzipi Livni didn't create a government just a few months ago, is that she wouldn't give in to the Shas demands for half a billion shekels for their yeshivot and to supplement their population, their large family populations. Plus the fact that they insisted that Jerusalem be off the negotiating table. But I think that at least as important, and from my point of view, more important, was that they demanded 500 million shekels. She wouldn't give it to them, and therefore we had elections. The elections cost us 2 billion shekels. And now if after the elections, the Likud, in order to form a majority government, takes in Shas and gives them and Likud gives them the half a billion shekels, we're still almost 3 billion shekels out, when we all know that there is a tidal wave or a tsunami or whatever they want to call it of economic problems coming our way. And while they talk here a lot about how we're not as bad off as America and our banks are more better and on and on, there is the wave of unemployment that's coming through. We're seeing it. It's going to happen. The loss of capital is tremendous. The loss of contributions. We just heard about a man in America who stole $50 billion, some of which was money earmarked for charity work here in Israel. So that money is going to have to come from somewhere to help some of these people. And it should come from the government, but it should be very judiciously allocated and not by the religious parties themselves who are very free with other people's money. This is going to be a very interesting election. I also wanted to mention that we also have a Green Leaf Party here, which is a party to legalize marijuana, which often gets confused with a Green Party, Green and Green Leaf. I also wanted to say something about this new Arab party that may or may not get into the Knesset, and that is the first time, as far as I know, that there's an Arab party that is dedicated to the issues of the Israeli Arabs, rather than being dedicated to the issue of the Palestinians, wherever they may be, or to the Arab world, or to the Muslim world, or to Iraq, or to all these other issues which the Arabs in the Knesset at this point have been most involved with, and are going to be involved in the issues of the Israeli Arabs, and to try and help them, and to make their lives better here, which is, and I think that all the Israeli public will recognize that as legitimate, and as worthy, and as calling for respect. And I think it could really change the whole way that Israelis look at the Arab population, because up until now, all the Arab representatives, which they choose freely, have been primarily spend their time in their public capacity speaking in the Knesset, spend their time denouncing Israel, which makes you wonder why they even want to live here, if it's a racist and it's not democratic, and this leader is terrible, and that leader is terrible, and all the terrible things they say about us here and abroad, because then they go to Syria and they go wherever to say those things. And if we instead had an Arab party that concentrated on the legitimate needs of the local Arab population, I think this could be a fantastically revolutionary change for the Arabs and for the Jews in this country.
I agree entirely. I think that the moment the general public here feels that the Arab leadership is addressing the real nitty-gritty needs of the minority citizenry who happen to be Arab and non-Jews, that there will be an opening up and a respect and an appreciation and possibly even support of them getting their fair share. It's very hard for any government to be sympathetic to the Arab leadership right now when its whole purpose literally is to destroy the state of Israel, so whatever means possible. Actually, the Arabs getting what they really rightfully should be getting for their communities, their fair share. And if there's a sense that they're full participants in the country, in all respect, including the military, then whatever alterations that may be needed for a unique situation, then I think that will be an interesting situation here.
For those who don't keep track as closely as we do, the elections will be February the 10th. It could be that by February 11th we know the results, but we still don't know what the government will look like, because the process here is that the chairman of the party that gains the largest percentage of the votes then goes to the president and is formally given, I think, a 21-day period of time in which to organize together enough Knesset members to support him as the prime minister. And every Knesset party whose members he will want to vote for him, by and large, the tradition is also will ask for specific financial considerations in order to support him. And so the actual prime minister and his cabinet could be almost a month, could take a month for it to gel, for us to find out who will make up the coalition and who of the coalition people will be getting which particular jobs, and equally or maybe even more significant, how much money it will cost to pay off the various coalition members in order for them to join the coalition, and how much it will cost us, and how much, because there's only one pocket here, basically. So we're talking about how much money will go to support a government rather than to be used to support the people. The other issue that I think is of critical importance, that a limited government of secular national unity could and must deal with, is the problem of governance. And one of the reasons that many people feel we have a real problem with governance here is that we don't have a direct election of anybody. All we can vote for is a party, and by default, the chairman of that party, as decided upon by that party, then becomes the leader and the prime minister. And many people claim that what we should have is a system in which we have direct elections, somewhat like in the United States. In other words, people who represent an area rather than representing a party or a small interest group. Several other changes: that the prime minister then chooses his cabinet, not according to political considerations, but according to who he can work with and who he feels would do the best job possible in the particular area of that cabinet post, rather than this party gets 3 cabinet members and that party gets 4 cabinet members, and then they start to, you know, this party wants this position and that party wants that position. All that is a waste of time, is more than a waste of time. It sucks energy and makes governing this place very difficult. And to move more into an American-style system where the prime minister would choose his cabinet based on who he thought could do the job, and without consideration for if they were a member of that party or some other party, without having to pay them hundreds of millions of shekels in order to support their voters and get the best people for the best jobs. And also what happens here that people may not realize is that the members of the government, the ministers, are also members of the Knesset, which means that we're, at least the American tradition, the only one I'm really familiar with, where you have the 3 different governing groups of the country are separate, and you have separation of powers, and it's in that separation of powers that you gain a great deal of efficiency and honesty. Here we have people serving in 2 parts of that triangle. We have people who are both in the legislative and in the executive branch of the government, and they get, and in addition to the practical problem, they get 2 salaries. They get a salary as a member of Knesset, and they get a salary as a member of the as a minister. And when they retire, they get retirement pay from the Knesset, and they get retirement pay from the government. The inefficiency here is multiplied in ways that are hard to imagine. And obviously, none of the small parties, the Jewish religious parties, or the small Arab parties for that matter, are interested, would vote for a change in the system. It's like voting to expel themselves from the Knesset and from positions of power. So those are the 2 issues which I think a secular national unity government could focus on. And then we go back and elect a government to deal with a wider scale of problems.
And if nothing more, I'd be happy even with a system such as even in England, where a certain percentage of the members of the Knesset, of the parliament, are directly represented in districts. And then if you want to have a national group that represents the party based upon the amount of people who have been elected, I'm willing even to concede that. But I think there has to be a national election for a president or a prime minister, and there has to be direct representation to represent them. Otherwise, there's no voice to be heard on a local level here, and that needs to be severely changed, because we are a small state. There's no reason for us not to be able to have the will of the people represented truly in the government, and especially on local issues. It's crucial, because the local issues, because we're so small, is really national. But all everybody wants to focus on is who gets the money for this issue, for that issue on a national level. The voices in the wilderness, so to speak, the mayors or whatever, who don't have any power or vote when it comes to the general governmental issues or governmental political situation. So I do agree. I think it's desperately needed, and I think it will only enhance our own stability as a nation as a result.
Well, good, Steve. I guess if it was up to us, we'd fix it. I also wanted to mention that people talk about democracy and have various things to say. We are a democracy. We're not a democracy. I think the challenge of being a democracy is immense. The little that I know, and like I say, the only place I really have, because I didn't know about the English at all, the British, I have any experience with is in the United States, and I find various elements in the American system to be questionable as to the degree that they actually do represent the will of the people, which is the idea, and the whole issue with the Electoral College rather than direct votes and so on and so forth. In short, my feeling is there is no perfect democracy at this point in the modern world. All of the systems are compromises of one sort or another, and the challenge is to arrive at the best possible compromise, which works for the particular nation culture that we're dealing with. And for us, it's really critical that we find one that works and works well. I hope that that can happen. It seems unlikely at this point, but let us hope.
With that, this is Steve.
And that was Yoram.
And that was Yoram. And Yoram's going to be going overseas for about 3 weeks. We wish him a great and enjoyable trip, visit family and friends, and hopefully when he comes back, we'll be doing a more regular programs together, which I find very stimulating, and I think from those who are listening also enjoy it very much. You've been listening to IsraelScene.com, and have a great week.